The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Never liked him.
Oh my god. But that's the other podcast. This is Tales from the Gutter. Hello, I am your host, Mickey.
I'm Blake, and I only ever know the show's begun when you correct us for talking about the wrong topic.
And I'm Brent.
Yes, and he is Brent.
He sure is.
It's a welcome respite to have a Brent.
It's always a welcome respite to have a Brent.
There you go.
Never hurts.
Let me tell you, I've
much,
had a Brent.
Much better than a Brett.
Much better than a Brett.
Well, I've never had a Brett.
You shouldn't.
No, Brett's in our listener base, don't write.
No, Brett's go in your hair.
You can sext us, but you have to misspell your name as Brent in the sent line.
Or else we'll just ignore you. Unfortunately, there is neither a Brett nor a Brent involved in this story.
Oh yeah, what are we learning about today?
So, as red-blooded, upstanding Haligonians with fine social credit and good taste...
Who are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. I presume you've heard of a little ship called the Titanic. Perhaps.
Once or twice.
Mayhaps.
You're nodding at me when I'm saying pull in closer to the microphone. You're good?
Are you good? Okay. Right. That our fair city tries to eke some tourist bucks out of every year. Except for this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we still do that?
We're kind of doomed on that. For those who weren't alive in the 90s, the HMS Titanic was a luxury passenger ship owned by the White Star Line in the early 20th century. Designed by Thomas Andrews and built in Belfast by Harland and Wolff.
Mr. Andrews!
The Titanic could carry over 3,300 people, that's including 900 crew and approximately 2,400 passengers, across the Atlantic in mostly fine style, ticket class depending, at a then remarkable speed of 26 miles per hour. At nearly 900 feet long and weighing over 45,000 tons...
Jesus, that sounds sinkable.
Yeah. It's totally fine. Nothing can go... Nothing that big can
nothing
go wrong.
Nothing in this massive ocean could ever do anything to this.
Listen, have you ever seen Mount Everest sink? No, you haven't. I win.
Oh my god, knock on wood. The rest of this already happened. Jesus Christ.
It was the grandest ship of its age. An engineering marvel that was touted as, of course, being unsinkable. A floating fuck you to fate in the form of a pleasure palace. And a bit of a heavy-handed allegory for class struggle, if you ask me. Leaving from Southampton on April 10th, 1912, for its maiden voyage to New York City, it struck an iceberg late on April 14th and sunk beneath the icy waves during the early morning hours of April 15th, 400 miles off the coast of Newfoundland, taking 1,500 lives, including members of the ultra elite, such as John Jacob Astor, Benjamin Guggenheim, and Isidore Strauss. The tragedy would quickly enter the popular imagination through terrifying and heroic details of the night on board, and not long after the mighty ship had settled at the bottom of the seafloor, the first dramatic portrayals were wheeled out to a hungry public. The first film, Saved from the Titanic, was released into theaters just 29 days after the sinking.
What?
Starring Dorothy Gibson, who had actually been on the Titanic.
Oh, okay, that's awesome.
And it was based on her own first-hand account, which she then recreated in the clothing she wore that night.
Oh my god. That is true disaster porn.
Yeah, she then suffered a nervous breakdown and never worked again.
As I just said.
Yeah. Horrible.
Damn.
It was super popular.
Quick side note about Titanic museums.
Yeah.
Apparently the Belfast Titanic Museum has, like, fuck all in it. At least if QI is to be believed. Which I was like, ooh, well, Halifax, we at least have. And I was like, what the fuck do we have? Like, a deck chair or two and a bunch of dead bodies.
Yeah.
And not even probably them anymore, just the spots.
My parents actually went to it, and it looked really cool. It had, like, it doesn't have, like, artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
It has information terminals.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
No artifacts to speak of.
But it's like,
we got
the
deck chairs, motherfuckers.
Yeah, we got deck
Come
chairs.
Come to Halifax, unless you're from outside of the Maritimes.
Also, yeah. We got the body of Jack, and you're not getting him unless you pay the ransom.
And you don't want him. He was a baby. It's real sad.
We also
oh, yeah.
have a stupid Winston Churchill statue, which I hate.
That's a really weird statue, too.
It's covered in poop.
It's very melty.
It's made of guns.
That's fucking weird.
It's made of, like, I think Nazi guns.
Oh, that's kind of
like,
cool.
Like cannons from ships. That's why it's just melted fucking.
He's so
like
fucking
iron.
Complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does he get a statue or not? That is a whole episode.
To be fair, it
I
is
don't know.
So unrecognizable that I think you have to go out of your way
but
to find out
what
who
I
it
mean.
Is. Oh, you're absolutely right.
Like,
you're
he saved Britain
right.
from the Nazis. I'm like, he really did.
And then he murdered a bunch of Indians and Kurds.
He really did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Choices.
Yeah, choices.
Yeah.
Bad ones. Good
yeah.
ones. Bad ones. Good ones.
Yeah. And then I know everyone's like, well, you just give the people with the untarnished legacies a statue. And I'm like,
yeah, that's a hard one.
No, you're going to have very few statues. And then people are like, really? But genocide's your line? And I'm like, no, I get that. Okay.
Yeah. No, that should probably...
Well, the thing is, smart people make dumb decisions and don't believe the right thing at the right time.
And they don't deserve statues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that one may be really hard to tear down because it's like military iron.
Also, the principle of it being melted down Nazi guns kind of gets to the heart of the better part of his legacy,
I
at least.
I think that's what it is.
But
I know
made
it's
of
guns.
He's made of war.
Yeah.
Like
so, yeah, there is a lot more to that statue that almost makes it like, okay, I can see that.
My position has always been that you put up a statue of a starving Indian child across from him.
That would be perfect.
Because then you're like, yeah, he does deserve a statue made of melted down Nazi guns. But he also deserves to be, like, doing his thoughtful gaze across the path at this starving, skin and bones Indian child with no emotion written on his face but determination.
But it's a whole long
there's your context.
Right beside.
That's brilliant. I really like that, actually.
Solving society's problems.
One statue at a time.
Anyway. Since 1912, there have been 18 feature films based on the Titanic and countless hours of television, some of it crazy as shit. Don't watch Holmes and Watson. It is drivel. Suddenly, the Titanic takes place in, like, 1890s, and it's involved in just the stupidest fucking plot.
I played a Titanic-themed video game in 1998 in the computer lab at Oxford Regional High School.
Was it the space one?
No, it was Titanic Out of Time. And you were like preventing World War I, World War II, and the rise of the Soviet Union if you managed your spy activities on board the Titanic properly.
And if you failed,
various things happened, including German fascists seizing London and also in another one, Soviet soldiers seizing London as well, and you dying at the end of both.
How bad?
Yeah, but if you did it right, there was no World War I or II or Soviet Union, because apparently the Tsar was more preferable. But the important part of
how
this
bizarre.
Is... How
bizarre. Oh my.
The more important part of this is, though, that this introduced me to Eric Satie,
okay.
A French composer. Beautiful fucking piano music. Just the most haunting and beautiful things I've ever heard. And that was the soundtrack in this video game. I was like, what? Like, this is Titanic themed and interesting anyway, because I haven't moved to Halifax and been overdone on it yet. Or seen that fucking movie. But, like, otherwise it's cool and it's spy shit. But, like, this is beautiful. Thank you for doing this.
And it's, like, Titanic has become zeitgeist. Like,
yeah.
It's the...
I bet that game still exists. I should make that happen.
But no, it has. It's become zeitgeisty, and so, like...
Well, it's easily accessible, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing of this episode, like, you know.
No,
sometimes it's like, oh, God, I haven't researched this person before. This is going to be fascinating, but also, like, all new information. But this, I have a room to...
Yeah, you
to assemble
have
these
an
new
idea. You
object bits
it.
Of stuff in. Yeah.
Yeah,
I can picture it, Cicely.
Exactly, and that you can picture it is
thanks.
Actually very much credited towards this. This movie. So one, however, does stand separate from the rest, a juggernaut of a production, costing a then record-setting budget, starring vain, self-interested prima donnas and directed by an outspoken artist.
I know you're going to, like, curveball us here.
Yes.
And I'm excited about that.
Okay. Full of memorable shots recognizable as Titanic E to many years later, and produced by Joseph Goebbels.
That's delightful. That's delightful. I knew a curveball was coming for sure, but you never expect... I was going to say the Spanish Inquisition, but this is more the German Inquisition.
I try. In 1942, writer-director pair Walter Zierlett-Ulfinas and Herbert Selpin, who had worked together on numerous films before and during the Nazi regime, were granted permission by the propaganda ministry, directly from Minister Goebbels himself, to produce a sprawling epic on about the ship and its tragic voyage, focused on pro-Nazi beliefs that the same Western capitalism that led to Germany's economic collapse also created the same perfect storm that led to the sinking of the Titanic, plus, you know, some anti-Semitic ravings just to fill time.
That's hilarious, because the start of that little bit of info there...
Yeah.
Like, yeah, unfettered capitalism did lead to that. There were no, like...
No, it
know,
did.
...safety regulations, and a bunch of rich people, like, rich men got in boats, and I presume that's what you always hear.
Yeah, no, and it is, and they folk, like, because those are the known facts, that's what they hyper-focus on as being, like, decadent Westerners.
Mm-hmm. So in a way...
Yeah.
I'm not going to say Goebbels wasn't wrong, because that's going to be the pull quote from this episode.
We're not touching that one. The film bluntly asserts that Bruce Ismay himself caused the ship to sink in a reckless attempt to beat an Atlantic crossing record, simply to boost the White Star Line's stocks and cut major corners during construction to build it on the cheap.
Isn't there hints of that in the...
That's the thing. There are hints that make this... Like, there's a reason that this film is actually viewed by a lot of, like, film nerds as, like, really quite good if you ignore the fact it was created as Nazi propaganda. Like,
I've heard the same thing said many times about Leni Riefenstahl, for Christ's sake.
No, like, that's very true, but James Cameron himself cribbed shots from it.
Leni Riefenstahl invented a goddamn genre. Like...
Yeah.
She invented the propaganda film for real.
Pretty much.
She
I mean,
used
yeah,
it for the worst thing, but like...
It is... Actually, I'll go into that at some point. The birth of the true propaganda film and like the flavors of it. So you've got Leni Riefenstahl in Germany, and then on the other side, you've got fucking like Walt Disney and Henry Ford.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just so vastly different approaches.
Henry Ford.
Or not Henry Ford. Now I've completely lost the name. His last name was Ford, I believe, and he was a Western director.
Okay.
He was very famous at the time, and he happened, I believe, to be on Okinawa.
I was waiting for, like, propaganda car commercials.
Oh, no, we're talking about, like, literal frontline filming by a Hollywood director. A well-known Hollywood director who did, like, predictable schlock that everyone loved.
It's like Spielberg going to, like,
yeah,
Afghanistan.
Yeah,
goes to
and
war.
Then, like, ends up in the middle of a battle and instead of panicking is just like, give me the fucking camera!
Amazing.
Yeah. So...
This needs to be captured.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why there's really good
arguably
footage of one
more
of those.
Laudable than Leni Riefenstahl.
Very arguably.
I'm getting a weird, like, slightly shady Nazi edit in this, and I don't approve of that. Everything here is terrible. Nazis are terrible. Don't be a fascist. Don't be anti-Semitic. Don't hate gay people. That would be rather self-hating of me.
You did come in Goebbels, though. You did.
I did not. I said he was right about one thing.
How dare. Evil. Well, the capitalists in charge of the ship and the first-class bourgeoisie all panic and begin to allegorically devour each other within the ship. When the ship starts taking out water.
I'm hung up on this. Didn't Hitler at least like dogs?
Kind of. He liked being seen with dogs, and then he would abuse them in private.
That's terrible. That's like Trump won't even be seen with dogs. Good God. Some people really do have no redeeming qualities. Don't ask me why in the middle of this episode I'm searching for redeeming qualities. We've gone down a dark road.
He likes dogs?
You like dogs?
If all you can ask about a person is like, wait, did they at least like dogs? And the answer is like, no. Then it's like, oh, wow, you really are the worst amongst us.
No, he did, but it was usually at about 350 degrees.
Jesus Christ. A fictional German first officer plays the hero. He ignores the selfish orders from the company and saves as many passengers single-handedly as he can with, of course, his equally German girlfriend.
Can you imagine growing up on American cultural export as we do, having to deal with a bunch of films where it's always an American who's the hero in every scenario? God, that would be so obvious and annoying.
How terrible, how terrible.
I can barely imagine a world like that.
Before turning star witness at the resulting inquiry testifying against Bruce Ismay, but because it's a corrupt Western court, he gets away with it. Ooh.
Of course.
Again, if you're searching for plausibility.
Goebbels loved the story. Not just for its adherence to Nazi ideology, but as a potential grand spectacle that could prove the supremacy of the German film industry.
Oh, good.
Against the American Hollywood juggernaut that the regime viewed as inherently Jewish. The fact
that... See, I knew it was coming to that. Yeah. I was like, it's not just because you got
to
be good at film.
No.
Like, that would be like...
It always comes
down to the shit. That would be a cute story from an awful period in history where you're like, oh, Joseph Goebbels got sidetracked by Hollywood competition. It's like, well... That would have taken him out of the whole propaganda ministry shit, so that would have been good.
Good though? Or you're just going nose deep?
No, this is like deep.
This is alternate history where he gets into like just wanting to beat Paramount. And not just because they're Jewish, because we don't need to go there.
The fact that the world was engaged in a world war at the time didn't really seem to hinder his dream of the film eventually playing in American theaters, and the grateful cheers of Americans as they finally saw the light of Nazism. What instead happened was a clusterfuck that was so perfectly represented the failings of the Nazi state that it, in its own small way, helped the Allies more than it ever could have helped Germany.
Oh, I'm excited to learn this.
From day one, the production became a pet project for Goebbels, who had the sway and authority to demand vast resources that otherwise would have gone to the war effort, including the use of ships, shipyards, soldiers and sailors for extras, along with handcrafted, extravagant sets, and simply mountains of fucking money. The budget eventually inflating to over 14 million euros after inflation, well beyond the budget of the majority of Hollywood productions at the time. And the most expensive European film until that point.
That's hysterical. What year was this?
1940. They started that in 1942.
That seems like a really terrible time to do that. And I get the theory. I get the propaganda theory behind it. Like, you know, keep the masses
on your side. They literally, took over, military bases.
That's the thing. It's like, any German... Watching that, even at the time when I don't credit the German populace at large with supporting the best of decisions at all, would have watched that and just been like, well, how could you possibly have done this in the middle of a war?
I am eating
That's the
my
takeaway.
Shoe,
yeah.
And you spent how many Deutschmarks on this, you brick?
Yeah.
That's assuming that they had TVs.
Movie theaters. And they did have TVs. Nazis had some of the first experimental televisions. Television was invented in the 1920s.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, a lot of the early color footage is Nazi footage.
Yeah. They loved it because direct propaganda right into your home.
German footage from
Nazi times.
Now in
real color.
Too.
Exactly.
Like, this is our biggest issue.
Well, like, That's what the... That's how it rolled.
It's creepy because you see a bunch of American, like, World War II stuff, and then you see, like, the German stuff, and it's just, like, red Nazi flags everywhere.
Yeah,
like, oh, God, you really get a feel for, like, just how creepily overpowering it was at the time.
Yeah.
That American film at the time just doesn't capture because it's black and white.
No, and, like, it's so... It seems so distant, but, yeah, the you know, Nazi stuff is so bright, bold,
yeah,
clear, and you're just like, fucking hell, it was it was everywhere.
It's horrifyingly accessible,
yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah. Egos and creative decisions as well led to frequent clashes as production continued from 1942 to 1943, as the war began to sour. Goebbels was rumored to keep the project close to his heart and would make constant demands for additions and changes, while director Selten, himself a well-known outspoken auteur, demanded that his vision be respected above all else. Selten would typically get his way in the end, often resulting in the budget jumping yet again. By this time, Selten's long-time working relationship with screenwriter Zerlitt Ofinius had worn thin as well, with Selten making changes to his script without consulting and then acting as if the entire production was his idea and his alone. Everything came to a head midway through production as the crew were filming aboard the Cap Arcona, a cruise ship that would later be sunk by Allies after the Germans filled it with Jewish prisoners and marketed it as a warship. Yeah.
The expression on my face does not read for radio, but good lord.
Yeah. Evil shit. With Allied bombs falling in the distance constantly, leading to constant frustration at ruined shots and the threat of death from above, Selten called for a group...
Maybe don't film.
Yeah, I know, right? But no, this must be made. This must be made. Selten called for a group meet with everyone involved, where he railed incessantly about their working conditions, especially the German soldiers and sailors who Goebbels had sent for extras, who treated the assignment as a debaucherous vacation from the front and were known to molest the female cast and crew relentlessly. Now, while this seemed to be an overenthusiastic but accurate complaint about the behavior of the Kriegsmarine, Zerlitt Ofinius, either out of Nazi zealotry, because all of these people were hardcore Nazis.
Well, to get that much money thrown at them at the time, they'd have to be.
Yeah, they're all Nazis. Everyone in this story is a Nazi. One mustn't forget, or annoyance at Selten's fully armed and operational ego, decided to report his comments straight to the Gestapo, who passed them directly along to Goebbels, who, according to records, got into an afternoon-long screaming match with Selten over it, which Selten at the time seemed to think he won.
That's not picking the right fight at the right time.
That's a really bad one.
Or there is if you kill Joseph Goebbels, and then that's fine.
Yeah, that would have been great.
It's a moment where you want to be the fly on the wall. Just being like,
just wow.
What are you arguing about?
Like, we
just
say Goebbels. Is that a like grotesque anglicization?
Yeah, it's like Goebbels.
I mean, we don't care.
It's Goebbels.
Yeah. That sounds weird.
But Goebbels is weird.
Yeah.
Goebbels kind of makes him sound silly, and that's why we say it.
Yeah, he'd probably be cranky about that. So it's simple that.
Yeah.
I could keep it up, too, if you want.
Goebbels, however, had a different takeaway and had him arrested later that evening. Within 24 hours, Selten was dead in his cell, hanging from a noose that no one saw Selten take into the cell with him.
Shocking how these things happen.
I don't know how that happened.
This is, considering it's all Nazis all the time in this story, that's fucking hilarious. You waste all that fucking money on that production and then, like, fight with the guy in charge so you murder him.
I'm just entertained by a producer finally getting their dream and executing the director. When word reached the production, the cast and crew threatened a revolt, but Goebbels personally assured them that they would all share the same fate if they didn't shut the fuck up and get back to work, with an added caveat that if anyone in the entire German film industry had any complaint or concern about working with Zerlitt Ofinius, they would take it directly to Goebbels, who would get them in touch with his good friends in the Gestapo.
Well, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, that's...
Jesus Christ.
I mean, you know, when you've got someone in your back pocket, Damn. Now, executing your director midway through production may seem like every producer's dream, but it can really hurt the film in the end. And what was previously a brilliantly shot, engaging movie that even James Cameron stole shots from became kind of muddled and boring. Like, you can clearly see the difference in the shots, and you're like,
oh no, does it, like, progress through, like...
Not fully, but there's definitely
there's
heavier stuff.
In between.
Yeah, there's heavier stuff near the end, and there's enough stuff in between that you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
You did not have the eye. Became muddled with boring, lazy work at the hand of Selpin's replacement, Werner Klinger, a former Hollywood director who had actually moved back to Germany in the 30s.
Oh, you're a dick with poor judgment. We know that. Come on.
To capitalize on the Jewish artistic diaspora, who, to his limited credit, was able to bring the production to a close on time and without going any further over the budgetary constraints or sending argumentative notes to Goebbels.
They're not going over budget at that point. Like, to give him... I don't know why I keep giving Nazis credit here, but, like...
That
probably explains at least some, that's the pull quote.
Yeah.
It probably explains some of the shittiness.
Yeah. Just a little.
But also being the kind of person who's like, Jewish film directors are being persecuted and running away from Germany. Lots of jobs.
Yeah, so no, he was
Seem to want footage of people arriving at these camps. They never want footage of them leaving.
Curious.
I'm unconcerned.
Alas, while the final film is indeed a watchable spectacle, Nazi ideology aside, it was too late for the Ministry of Propaganda, who by 1943 had quietly shifted away from films that promoted the regime's ideals and toward preparing the German population for their imminent death and destruction. With a steady stream of martyr tales pumped out in the cheap to celebrate the dead and soon to be dead for the glory of the fatherland.
Jesus, as early as 1943, they were, like, preparing them for that?
So, like, a lot
What is the long-term goal there?
So that they would kill themselves for Hitler. So, a lot of, like, military defeats and Pyrrhic defeat stories and, like...
Did they think they would just exhaust the Allies eventually and be allowed to have a buffer state?
No, it was essentially, like, murder-suicide.
Just stave it off as long as you can, but we'll all end up in the gutter together.
Yeah.
Ugh.
We're going to kill you all slowly this way. The film itself was actually banned from being shown in Germany, instead touring the Greater Reich territories with great popularity in occupied France, where it received its widest release. The film did, however, survive the war, likely thanks to not being kept in Germany, unlike most Nazi propaganda films, and thus ending up destroyed, and has enjoyed an extended life as an oddball curiosity of Hitler's Germany. Zerlitt Ulfenius served 3 years in a prison camp for his work under the Nazis as a propagandist, while Klinger attempted to move back to Hollywood following the war, but was soundly rejected as a fascist swine and quickly kicked out.
Remember when America used to reject fascist swines?
Right? What a time.
Before they elected them.
Uh-huh. I wasn't going to go quite so on the nose, but thanks for taking it out. Don't blame me.
Both died in the mid-70s. Following the suicide of Hitler in late April 1945, Goebbels was promoted to Führer, post he held for a single day before murdering his young family, his wife, and finally himself. The remains of the predominantly Jewish prisoners kept on the Cap Arcona, the ship that stood in for the Titanic during filming and sunk not long after the production raft, would continue to wash ashore until 1971.
Ah!
Yeah.
I thought I ended the last podcast, Jack.
I will add one positive story, just to keep it from being obliteratingly horrible.
1971!
During the wrap party for James Cameron's Titanic in Mexico, someone, still unknown to this day, snuck angel dust, I mean a lot of it, into the entire cast meal. So they would make one meal for everyone, and like enough of it. And so it was in this one meal, and everyone who ate.
What the fuck is Angel Dust Studio?
It fucking fucks you.
Wasn't it like
up.
The bath salts of the back in the day?
It was. And you have an entire cast and crew on it. They flooded.
Is Angel Dust PCP?
Yes.
Yes.
They flooded a local hospital with ranting, manic lunatics from Hollywood.
That is wild.
So, like, a bunch of people
from Hollywood. And there's a lot of hushed up rumors about what stars were also dosed and behaving like.
Huh?
So, we have no details, we say no names.
I think that's really unfair to anyway. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to.
Oh, no. Like, that's not your fault at all.
No, you're just a straight up victim.
Yeah. But James Cameron was the only one to avoid dosing, not because he didn't get dosed. He did. James Cameron was such a party boy. He recognized...
It's just too much to make a joke. I was like, well, James Cameron used to do so much fucking angel dust.
He recognized the symptoms of getting dosed as they came on and induced vomiting.
Smart.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Like, if that... Yeah.
Yeah.
What's happening around you, I would just be like, oh.
And so he was the only one to escape. And that is Titanic shit.
Damn.
Yeah.
Just the
Where's that in the Maritime Museum of the Atlantic?
Right? Give me that. I'll make that entire placard or whatever.
Honest to God, the history of the Titanic in film would actually be an amazing exhibit.
It really would. And there's so much craziness. Like, so there was that one that was made 29 days after, and then the second one was a German production that followed 31 days after.
Jesus.
And then there was another production by the Americans, but for some reason, it was in German.
Wait, what? One more time?
It was in the 1920s, there was a Titanic movie made in America by Americans, produced for Germany in German.
A lot of Americans still spoke German pretty late, but I don't think that
was. It was not sent to America. It was not played
in America. No,
but
I mean like...
The German parts of America.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's just one of those weird, like, a contract thing or something.
That is strange.
Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Tales from the Gutter. This has been a very enlightening podcast about Nazis and Titanic. I've completely forgotten the script for how I end this.
It's more important.
Shows.
We just drive home the point that no matter how much comedic japes we make, we are pretty much all anti-fascists around here.
Yeah, fuck them all.
Yeah, let's just drive that point home.
I have.
That might have gotten us some more listeners. I don't know if that's good or bad.
There we go. I have been.
That's
Mickey.
I agree with us. Oh, hi. I'm Blake.
I'm Brent.
There you go.
Yeah.
You've been on like a
sorry,
5 second delay.
I'm
on
out of it.
That's fine. We're recording from Newfoundland over here.
If you're interested in some more of our content, check us out at patreon.com/hereego. We've got lots of stuff there.
I didn't say it last time on the other podcast, but we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/bygenderouscinema.
Because I
so
fucked
ding
up
the
thing. Delivery. Ding the thing for more options.
You can ding the thing.
And stuff.
And listen to our other podcasts. We just did a great fucking Star Trek one.
It's true. We've got a bunch of great Star Trek stuff coming out.
We're slightly obsessed. All of us.
Yeah.
Probably so.
We're in a golden era again. It's happy and I'm nice, and there's three shows, possibly four.
There is some disagreement about the Lower Decks, but it doesn't come out for a couple days, so
I should.
It's
edit
also
this
a good
together with that episode, so it becomes this like Mobius strip of
the
unending
super
podcast.
Mega crossover episode.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Nothing says summer like a rich, creamy ice cream float from Skyline. Made with two scoops of fresh vanilla ice cream and your choice of Barq's Root Beer, Barq's Red Cream Soda, or any of their Coke products. At participating Skyline locations while supplies last.